themed party hosted by Google last night. Lots of you who had a lovely time? Yeah, was it good? Was there gelati? Was there food? Was there beverage? Excellent. And who went to the professional delegates networking session? Just about everybody else. Was there professional networking? No. Who was excited by CyRac? CyRac. Only a few of you. Okay. The beer ran out. Yeah, you get that. Especially when you drink a lot. I've got a whole bunch of bits of scribble here. There's an important bit of scribble. I did mention it yesterday. I need to mention it again. It is the annual general meeting of Linux Australia, which is taking place tomorrow at 11 a.m. in this very room. The thing that I forgot to mention is that there are actually important motions to be moved. That sounds wrong, doesn't it? These have apparently, well, they have because I read them, been posted to the Linux Australia mailing list some time ago as in accordance with the appropriate governance and constitutional requirements and blah, 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 blah. But they are important. I don't know what they are. Do you want to mention what they are, John, or we'll just leave it, go read them? Just go read them. Or turn up and listen and vote tomorrow. And the voting, has it closed? Stuart, are you here? Voting has closed? Voting has closed, and all will be revealed at the annual general meeting. So if you want to know who shall lead us forthrightly into the future, come tomorrow at 11. Perhaps the Vice President is going to be helpful. Yeah, Stuart Smith, who will be the next president, so that's no surprise, but he'll clearly need some backup. Love you, Stewie. Following on from the annual general meeting is open day. Who is actually going to be able to be here? Who's not going home? Ever. Fantastic. Open day is going to be fantastic. Jacinta Richardson has done the most extraordinary job of pulling it together. Oh my God. I am so grateful that she said yes when I said, Jacinta, please organise open day for me. And she took pity and did. It's great. Something else about open day is the gaming mini-conf wants more people to help out. I don't know how you're meant to make yourself known, but Tim Ansell, where are you? See Tim Ansell, he wants bodies. I don't know what he's going to do with them. But in general, if you don't have too much of a hangover or you don't require more beauty sleep tomorrow morning, we would like some help setting up for open day from 9 a.m. because it will actually be just slightly up those stairs or up the lifts to the second floor if you're starting from the ground. Open day will be in this building. And we will need some help setting up from 9 a.m. Otherwise, I've just dropped my bundle. Damn it. Otherwise, from 12 till 4, 4.30 is open day goodness. So that's the open day bit. Right to the end, tonight, our final social event. The conference party, the closing party, kindly sponsored by Google. Google goodness. Thank you, Google. Everybody, thank you, Google. Which brings me once again to say thank you to all our sponsors. They've just been fantastic. Not only have they been, you know, fantastic in providing us with, you know, resources in terms of cash or prizes or in-kind or what have you, but they've actually all been really great to deal with and really supportive of this community. And, you know, in some ways, whilst we couldn't do without their financial and in-kind support, we really can't do without their community support, their support and spirit. It really does make a difference. It means that this conference is very well respected, and I think we really should give them a big, big round of applause. And because I'm not a marketing person, I'm not going to name them all. They're in your booklets. They're on the website. We love them lots and lots and lots. Thank you. I think that's it. So, without any further ado, let's just get on to the keynote, yeah? So, We've had two international keynotes. Did we like our keynotes, Bruce and Stormy? And so I wanted to have a local. I wanted to have a Melbourne person. So I asked someone if he'd be, you know, interested, if he'd consider speaking, you know, taking on this grand responsibility of doing a keynote at LCA. And he said, yes, it's fantastic. And then a couple of weeks later, he rang me and said, I'm not quite so local anymore. I'm moving to Sydney. But it's sort of still local, in an international scheme of things, I guess. Anthony Baxter is release manager, or has been for the past 4 years of Python, no? God knows how many years, he says. And he is going to be speaking today on Python, two snakes enter, one leave. Anthony Baxter, for those of you who know him, he needs no introduction. For those of you who don't, you can Google him, because that's where he now works. Anthony, over to you.
Excuse me a moment just to get this working. I should apologize up front. I am using a closed source software to do my presentation. Anyone who's got a problem with that can fix Impress to not be absolutely nightmarish. Otherwise, you know, this is how we have to work. And hang on a second, it's behaving badly. Naughty. Stop. Sucks slightly less. This is the answer. Go back to the start. Oh, what the hell? We'll just keep going. Yeah, I know, sorry. Go away. Go away! No, that's not helpful. It's actually the Microsoft mouse that's misbehaving, so... I was going to say they're a great hardware company, but really, not so much. Oh well, I'll just have to keep coming back and tapping the trackpad. So, I came up with this talk title, went, that's nice and vague. How hard can that be to come up with a talk on it? Turns out actually coming up with a specific talk title is a much better idea when it comes to actually writing the material. So, I'm one of the Python developers. There's my Python email address. Today I'm talking about the two new Pythons we've got coming out. Snake 1. Apologise if anyone's, afraid of snakes. There are a few pictures of snakes here. Just close your eyes and think of happy thoughts. Python 2.6. That'll be out later this year. Snake 2. Python 3.0. Has a few other names. It was originally known as Python 3000, or Py3k, or due to an amusing typo when Guido was setting up the original SVN branch, P3YK. It is, however, not known as Python 90210. This is Guido. This is not Guido. The pose is quite similar. You could be forgiven for mistaking it. The way to tell now is Guido has a big scruffy geek beard. Don't tell him I said that. Oh, bugger, we're being recorded. Okay, 3.0, also known as the release where we break all your code. Hi! But we're doing it for a good reason. Really, it's a good reason. Look, so cute! Big eyes! Wait, what? Hang on. Yes, sorry. We are going to, in fact, break almost every bit of Python code that is out there in the world today. It's a backwards incompatible release for the first time. It's really very backwards incompatible. To put it more precisely, pretty much every program will need changes. Sorry. Some quite big changes, and I'll just have a quick bit of a closer look at them, some of them now. Print, and this is the one that's going to break almost every program. Print becomes a function. The reason for this is because currently print has awful syntax for doing all sorts of wacky things. There's the angle brackets, there's the trailing comma. Yucky! More importantly, almost every program at some point, print gets turned into log so that it goes to a nice output. Now all you have to do is replace the function name. You're done. Hurrah! The other one that's going to break a lot of code really subtly is that Unicode is now the default. This just fixes a whole lot of horrible, horrible problems. There's a real shambles in Python at the moment when you're mixing Unicode and non-Unicode strings. The behavior is somewhat non-deterministic, which was a polite way of saying, ooh, who knows? Unfortunately, of course, there are times where you do need non-Unicode strings. We call it the internet and protocols. So we have byte strings. These are not the default string. The default string is a Unicode. You put a little B in front of your quotes and you get a byte string. Byte strings have to be given an encoding. There's none of this implicit, ooh, I hope it works. Set literals, hurrah! Sets rock. I love sets. I use them all the time. And there's now a literal spelling of it, which is just, looks like a dictionary, but just with keys rather than values. The way you spell a single element, an empty set, is S-E-T, bracket, bracket. We decided that three characters is not too much of a price to pay for removing some really nasty syntactical ambiguity. There are set and dict comprehensions. You can do comprehensions across a set, you can do comprehensions across a dictionary. Rockin'. Comprehensions are just fabulous. Slight thing I forgot to mention here in this slide is that list comprehensions are now just syntactic sugar around a generator expression. So again, just works perfectly. For those of you who are not Python people, I apologize. I'll come to some more non-quite so detailed stuff later on. There are function annotations. These are not used by the interpreter, but can be used by other code analysis tools. You can say this function expects an integer and returns a float, or whatever else, whatever you feel like, really. New style division is the default. Finally, we've been promising this since about 1.5. And every time we sort of talked about turning it on as the default, everyone starts screaming and crying and lying down and kicking their feet. Finally, with 3.0, we can finally turn this on. This means 1 divided by 2 no longer equals 0. It now equals 0.5. There are iterators everywhere, all through Python now. This was the way, once we've hit this point of realizing iterators rock, we should have been using these from day one. Oh, there's a whole bunch of really subtle reasons why we can't just switch it. It'll break people's code in a really subtle way. What the hell, we're breaking their code anyway, let's fix it. There are dictionary views. This is a little bit up in the air, but this is taken from Java. Like most languages, we steal from everywhere. JavaScript's looting Python, so we may as well loot Java. And there's a new I.O. layer. This is all very funky. It's basically to get rid of standard I.O. because standard I.O. has a whole bunch of really unpleasant behavior in various strange cases. Getting standard I.O. to actually be the STD part is also a bit interesting. It's not very standard. The other one that's a big one that I'm very excited about is the standard library reorganization. The standard library, for those of you who don't know Python that well, is known as the batteries included part of Python. It has more or less everything carried along with you. I love that little dog. He was at the big festival we're at on the weekend. He was so cute and so happy. And those bags had beer. A dog that plays with you and brings you beer. That's like the greatest invention ever. My cats won't do that. So we have PEP 8, which is the Python coding standard. One of the coding standards it has is all module names should be lowercase. Oh. Oops. Naughty. Yeah. These all went in there. The Python standard library has a whole bunch of things that violate PEP 8, violate the here's how you should write Python, except for this. Don't look at that. No, don't look! So we're going to fix those. We're also going to be reorganizing it to actually make it a bit hierarchical. So rather than just being a great big blob of modules, there will be some structure to it. Yay! This is going to be somewhat contentious because it's going to be the ultimate bicycle shed. You know, should it be called image or imaging? Should it be called audio or sound? At some point, probably Brett Cannon will just end up making a decision. He sort of took on the thankless task of running the reorg. There's a lot of stuff going away. This is stuff that I'm really happy to see go, and we'll come to that in a moment as to why I'm really so happy. Old-style classes are finally dying. The Python, for those of you who don't know, used to had a one style of object model, as of 2.2, which was about 5 or 6 years ago. We added a second object model. It behaves subtly differently in some cases and violently differently in others. It's a much better object model. There's a whole bunch of new features in Python that only work with new style classes. It causes an amazing amount of confusion for people learning the language. So we fixed that by just getting rid of the old ones, finally. We couldn't get rid of them before this. String exceptions. Back in the dim dark days when I first started using Python, which was an alt.sources post, the 0.9, all you could do was have an exception that was a string. Turns out this is a really bad idea for a whole bunch of reasons, mostly because you can't attach things to those exceptions. So we've now got the exception object. As part of getting rid of string exceptions, the exception hierarchy is being reworked, so it'll be easier to catch everything but control C. Those of you who have done a little bit of programming with Python newbies know the first thing they get wrong is they catch all exceptions, including the one where you're trying to make the program stop. And you watch them just sitting there, mindlessly tapping control C, going, "Will you die?" This one made a bunch of the Python developers who love that form of not equals very unhappy. Guido's response was pretty much, "Suck it." He hated it, and so now all you've got is exclamation mark equals. This is one I'm quite happy to see go away because I always get it wrong. My brain seems to think that has key, well, it's a dictionary thing, so I should put square brackets after it. Nowadays, all you do is key in dict. Apply, absolutely no reason for it. It's slow. It's slower than just calling using the argument and keyword syntax. It's gone. Bye-bye. Reduce. We did a reduce takes a list and an operator. It applies the operator to the first two elements of the list, then applies the operator to the result of that and the next one. We did a big analysis of a whole lot of Python code, and the only use that was being used for this was to add up a whole bunch of numbers. So now we have a built-in called sum, which adds up a whole bunch of numbers, and reduce can just go off somewhere special. It's going to go off into being moved out of the built-ins off into some sub-module where you can just deal with it, use it if you need it, but it's not a built-in anymore. I was never quite sure what coerce is for. Again, it dates back to about 0.9, sort of back about 1992 or so. It never really worked properly. People kept trying to use it for things, and it didn't really work. Sorry, so it goes away. Str.find, the string find method. If you search using find for a string, a substring in another string, and it's not there, you get back -1, which is actually a valid position. It's the last element of the string. This causes so much confusion for newbies. So it's gone. But wait, all those things are being broken. It's actually not so bad. We're trying to make it less painful than you can imagine.
How that works?
You lie!
2.x is also not going away.
Bring out the data's weapons!
I'm not dead!
What? Nothing? Here's your weapons.
I'm not dead!
There is going to be a 2.6. It'll be out about the same time as 3.0. There will also be a 2.7. I'm happy to commit to doing it if no one else is. It'll be just a matter of adding more features that we can backport from the main line of 3.0 to 3.1. When that's out, I don't know. I mean, we're talking about a 2.6 and a 3.0 sometime in the next 12 months, and they'll be about the same time, and then typically it's about 18 months between releases for Python. So there'll probably be a 2.7 at about the same time as 3.1. The only commitment we do make is that 2.9 is absolutely the last version of 2.x, if we haven't already given up by then. We are also going to continue with the security releases, which is about the maintenance releases about every 6 months for as long as it seems necessary. We're not expecting everyone to turn around and rewrite their massive code bases the day after 3.0 comes out. That would be very foolish. There is also a whole bunch of migration tools we're providing in 2.6. This is one of the big focuses we're adding. I don't know why that slide's blank. Go away. There's a program called 2-3. There's a warnings module, a warnings mode, -W Py3K. There's also going to be a whole bunch of from future import whatever, and I'll come to those in a bit. So why are we actually doing this? Why are we hurting you? Well, Python's 16 years old. I went and looked it up. I was actually surprised. It was first released in 1991. originally the slide was said it was 15 years old, and I went, oh hell, it's 2008. Like all 16-year-olds, it's got some really annoying features. All languages have annoying features. Like, the most simple languages you can think of have annoying features. You can't really get much simpler than HTML. You really, really can't get much simpler than HTML. Hang on, let's just fix that. Right. Every language has stuff that makes you go, what the, oh, why were they thinking this? One of the people we have at the large company I work at worked with at Bell Labs at the time of C++. He has a bunch of things to say about C++. And he was sort of like, I was trying to fix it, and I couldn't. Oh, well. So everyone just has to cope with it. It's the backwards compatibility problem makes it much harder to cope with. It's very hard to rip out those annoying features. Blink is still there in Firefox 3. I was very sad about that. Now, I've got an example of a really annoying Python wart here, and it's got a visual which might be a bit disturbing. That's Sam, the ugliest dog in the world. That's the top one. The bottom one is backtick syntax for repr. I hate the backtick syntax. I submitted a patch a couple of years ago that ripped out all uses of it. It never typesets properly. Depending on your font, it looks like a forward tick. It's just a nightmare. It's a really bad idea. I have a rule of thumb that syntax shouldn't look like a possible grid mark or a dead pixel on my screen. Unfortunately, it turns out Sam died a couple of years ago. I was quite sad to find this. I think Sam's actually kind of cute. Most people disagree with me. Elwood is now the new ugliest dog in the world. He's even cuter. I mean, that look is just fabulous. That look says, get out of my face, you paparazzi scum. In addition, as to all these warts, Python breaks its own rule, its own cardinal rule. 2D. I tried to get a photograph of Tim Peters, who's one of the core Python developers, car. That's actually his number plate. There's only one way to do it. Usually paraphrased is also there's only one right way to do it, with a subclause of that way may not be obvious unless you're Dutch. The back of the shirt here has the Zen of Python. If you type import this in Python, it's an Easter egg. It actually gives you the Zen of Python. We snuck that into a release at a conference where import this was the conference logo and waited all week. The release was a week before the conference and waited all week before somebody actually typed in import this to see what would happen. And then you see everyone running around going, we tried this, this is so cool. It was kind of amusing. It's about the only Easter egg we've ever added to the language. So if that's so, if Python has only one way to do it, why on earth do we have both map and list comprehensions? Do we have string functions and string methods? We have old and new style classes. We have, you know, countless numbers of things where there's this and this. In the standard library, in the core language, there's multiple ways to do things. There's the usual reason we have this, and you'll have to excuse me, I only just noticed that then. Ignore the image placeholder bit. I tried to Photoshop up a little picture of some hysterical raisins. It turns out to be quite a hard problem. I just noticed that then, and I thought I'd take it all those out. Oh well, the usual reason for hysterical raisins is you have a better solution. Plus, you then have to maintain backwards compatibility so people using the old and broken solution don't get hurt. So it's a good thing, backwards compatibility. But the problem is that you have a cost to backwards compatibility. There's always a cost when you make these sort of decisions to keep around the old rubbish. It hurts. So the cost, in this case, is at the expense of the phrase, Python fits in your brain. I forget where this originally came from. It's a really nice way of expressing one of the language's strengths. It's a very simple language, very expressive language, and you can usually keep the whole language in your brain. In my case, the only documentation I really look up regularly is the documentation for regular expressions. That's because it's a sub-language and it makes no sense whatsoever. Sorry, Perl guys, but it really doesn't. Brains are limited, with one obvious exception. A bigger language, which is what we've got now than what we used to have, it's much harder to learn. Much, much harder to learn because you've got all this extra stuff you have to teach newbies. It's harder to use. So an example of harder to learn, and I think there's Chris is here from NCSS. This is the National Computing Summer School. It's a bunch of high schoolers who it's brought together once a year. The teachers put in applications, and Chris will have to correct me if I'm wrong here. The teachers put in and parents put in applications for them. 70 of them are selected. They're taken to University of Sydney for 9 days. They're taught programming. They're taught Python. They build a website. They do all the Ajaxy CSS stuff, and then they build a search engine, all in Python. There's about 70 of them. Most of them don't have a lot of programming experience, and a lot of what they have is Visual Basic, which is not actually a programming language. I should have got a clip-on beard for this, really. It just occurred to me then. Yeah. So in 9 days, they have to learn Python, build a website, learn CSS, learn HTML, and then build a search engine. Most of them, when I was there, were asking, so how does Google do their search engine? We look at web pages and then we serve them up. Hi. Most manage it in that time. That's pretty impressive when you think about it. You're talking about 16 and 17-year-olds who have had not a lot of programming experience. They've picked up a whole new language. I went on the last couple of days and did a talk with some more advanced Python constructs. I was really surprised how far along a bunch of them were. And they were really enjoying the programming exercises because the language just worked for them. Things were obvious. They could look at the code and they could read it. It's a great language for teaching. It's also, and then another example of that, of course, is everyone's favorite little green toy. That's all in Python, and part of that is because it's an easy language to learn and teach to kids. By the way, if you are looking to teach kids Python, this is now the follow-on to a quite classic book called How to Think Like a Computer Scientist in Python. I highly recommend it. I was really impressed by it. It's written by teachers. There was a Jeffrey Elkner, I think, was responsible for the original Think CSPY. Alan Downey is involved with this one, I think. I'm pretty sure the other guys are also involved with helping. It's a really nice book. really nice book. It's available for free on the web. I believe it's always going to be available for free, or you'll be able to buy the printed copy as well, which, you know, looks a little less ugly. Language complexity has a cost. That cost is at the expense of people having to learn the language, obviously, and people having to use the language. And I'll give you an example of complexity here. We've got the number of built-ins here by version. So in 1994, we had 40 built-ins, 40 things that, you know, people could relatively be expected to have to keep in their mind. 1.5.2, which is where Python development stalled for a while, it was for a long time the standard version of Python, there were 54. Okay, we're getting a few more. By 2.1, we're up to 69. That's starting to become problematic. By 2.5, we're up to 82 built-ins. We've doubled. That means, just as a base thing, the language is now, for some intents and purposes, twice as complicated. Because these built-ins are part of the language spec. They're part of the language implementation. People have to remember them. Worse yet, a bunch of those ones, as they go carefully learn, are rubbish. Apologies for this photo. I just loved it too much. I don't know what it is. But I'm really curious to find out. So, for instance, apply. No one should ever use it, but it's there. Worse yet, it begins with A, so it's usually one of the first built-ins people learn, and then you have to beat it out of them. Well, not beat, you're not allowed to beat children. Encourage. Callable, makes no sense. Absolutely no reason for it. Python has what we call duck typing. We also have easier to ask forgiveness than permission. If you want to know if something's callable, you call it. It fails. Well, it wasn't. Okay. Then there's my favorite. Input and raw input. You'd expect input would be the one you'd use. You'd be wrong. Input evaluates its argument. It calls eval on what you on its return value. So you type something in and it evaluates it. Uh-oh, not good. Raw input, which has got the really horrible name, looks like some sort of, you know, thing you wouldn't ever use, is actually the one you want to use. An example here, if I was to type in this, enter a number and somebody type, I then type in os.systemechopwn, it will actually execute that. I'm sure you can all spot the obvious problem here. It's pretty much what I like to call a giant fail. So as I say, this makes teaching harder, but it's worse than just teaching. It's regular users, and more importantly, irregular users. So I've actually might have mentioned the place. I was hoping not to, but I will. We'll just pretend that I haven't mentioned it.
We have a lot of coders.
Obviously, I can't say how many, but it's a lot. We have a lot of a number of languages. We do C++, we do Java, we do Python, JavaScript, Shell. People are bouncing in and out of languages. It's very, very rare for someone to be exclusively monolingual. But Python is a big part of company. Don't bother reading anything into the graph. They're just relative numbers. Don't bother thinking, maybe it's by a million. No, 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 they're just percentages. You can see here, Python's about sort of 15% or so of the total code base at company. So, you know, it's used for a lot of the core glue, which is what it's very good for. It's a really good glue language. So people are having to bounce in and out between Java and Python. They need to context switch. In that case, a lighter weight language is a huge win. They can read it. They can just jump back to it and go, what the heck's this? Ah, ha, 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 right, good, and not have to try to context switch out all of the horrible Java and C++ cruft that they've bolted into their brain. And I'm having to do Java at the moment, and it makes me sad. Python is known as executable pseudocode. It's amusing that I'll find even the hardest core C++ and Java programmers, when they're whiteboarding, they're usually writing Python code up on the whiteboard, just because it's an agreed pseudocode format, and it actually has, you know, agreed syntax and agreed semantics. So for these guys, simpler is much, much better. It's a much better thing. If you can keep the language like in your brain, so that when you jump to it, you can go, aha, I know what this does, excellent. You can then not have to worry about so much. And that makes us all very happy. So I thought I did mention this earlier, and I was trying to find a segue, and there really isn't one, so I just put a next slide up. Going back to the migration strategies I talked about earlier. Migration from 2 to 3. This is something we really care about, largely for our own needs. We don't have to want to rewrite all of our code either. There's a program in the code base called 2to3.py. Awesome name, really. I mean, you couldn't imagine what it does. It parses Python 2 code and converts it to Python 3 code. It does most things. Obviously, you'll want unit tests. This is preaching to the choir. And like most religious things, everyone goes, of course I have unit tests. Of course I turn up to church on Sunday, except when I don't. But you know, you will really want to have this. We have a workflow suggested, which is as long as you're having to maintain Python 2 and Python 3, you take your Python 2 code, you automatically translate it. If there are problems, you fix the problems in the initial Python 2 code, and then just keep the Python 3 code as being the automatically generated code. Don't try to maintain two code bases. It'll make you sad. Any time you have to maintain multiple code bases for no reason is bad. So this is the workflow we've suggested. But the problem is that something that's analyzing the code can't do everything. So in 2.6, we've added a bunch of warnings, and there's going to be more and more of these going through. We turned on with either -WPy3K or possibly -3. We're still trying to work this out. It'll warn about 3-point-whatever problems. So, for instance, there's a whole bunch of ways to call the dict.hasKey method that are hard for a static analyzer to pick up. So instead, we just bolted into the underlying implementation, and if it sees the hasKey method getting called, it just goes, bugger off. So that's a work in progress. They're actually working quite hard on it. A couple of the newer developers who have popped up have decided this was a really interesting problem, so great. We also have from future import 3.x feature. So for instance, you'll be able to go from future import print function, and suddenly print will become a function. If you just type a bare print by itself, you'll just get back the function object print. It stops being a statement. There'll be an example of a whole bunch of bees all the way through, and we'll add more and more of them in 2.7. My personal goal is for -3. When you run the interpreter with -3, it will actually turn on all of the 3.x compatibility and warning flags and as much as possible. So that there's a gradual migration strategy. There's a bunch of non-goals for 3.0. Some of these are quite controversial. One of them is any massive changes to the language. Python is still going to stay Python. I lied before when I said there was only one Easter egg in Python. There's actually two. Hopefully you can read that. I should have made the font a little bigger. If you type from future import branches, that's what you get back. And that's been there for quite a while. Python will still be white space. Will you still use white space for white space for blocks? This is just part of Python. It's not going to change. We're not going to add multi-line lambdas. The fact that lambdas are horrible now doesn't mean if we make them bigger and gnarlier, that will be better. Also, I have a pet hate. I always misspell lambda. B and D, I have a blind spot. We're not removing the global interpreter lock. This one's quite controversial. This is, for those who don't know, Python has a single lock that protects the interpreter innards. This means that when you've got a multi-threaded, multi-core architecture, you actually lose quite heavily. My argument to that is you shouldn't be using threads, you should be using processes. I'm quite happy to go on some length, probably, you know, as much as Rusty is, about how bad and evil threads are. There are other solutions if you do need this. For instance, IronPython doesn't have this problem and is getting up to about the same speed as CPython on .NET. Mono, they're getting faster and faster as, you know, they get embarrassed by various bad features. We're not rewriting the interpreter. This one was another one that a bunch of other language people said, you should totally rewrite your interpreter. That's a great idea. We're doing that all the time. It's not a bad idea. And I was going to name names, but I thought that's bad. So we'll just, you know, hint. This is, by the way, I'm not making any sort of aspersions on these guys. I think what they're doing is fabulous and great. But, for example, SchmerlPix has taken a very, 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 very long time to come to fruition. We don't want to have to go through that. I mean, I couldn't imagine waiting so long for a language to come out as fix. And again, when Rhymes with Trozilla did their initial rewrite, there was a whole lot of, oh my God, this is insane, you guys are out of your mind. What they've come up with eventually is fabulous. It's great, you know, everyone loves Firefox. But it did take a long time to get there. We're not fundamentally, you know, sort of disgusted and embarrassed by our core implementation. CPython is actually the reference implementation of Python. There are now multiple implementations of Python. We try very hard to avoid serious hackery. There's a couple of times when people have come up with really neat solutions that give us about 5% performance improvement, say, but it involves a massive change of the internals and makes it much more complicated and fragile. We'll generally not put that in the CPython implementation. The idea is this thing should be able to run on almost anything, and it should be that someone can pick up the code and understand it. There's a whole bunch of really cool and elegant code inside CPython. It's actually readable. For instance, the list sort algorithm is actually one of the best examples of how to do sorting. It's got a lovely little text document describing it all, and you just read it, and it's like an advanced course in sorting algorithms. It's like all sorting algorithms are a hybrid, and it's just fabulous stuff. So as I say, the serious hacks hurt Python developers. They make us cry, they make us sad. They also hurt portability. X86 specific hacks, for instance, would just be a stupid idea. The world is much fuller than X86. There are other implementations where they feel less constrained by this. IronPython, its internals are seriously weird, but really cool. It runs on Mono. You can run it on .NET, I guess, if you really want it to. It's actually Microsoft open source. One of the really cool things Jim Huguenin did, this is, by the way, the guy who wrote Numeric Python, then he wrote Jython, then he wrote IronPython. He wrote IronPython because he wanted to write a paper about why .NET sucked for dynamic languages. So, I'll prove them all. Implement Python. Ooh, it's actually quite good. And then eventually Microsoft hired him. One of the things he did in the initial IronPython had one of the useless Microsoft licenses. Jim went, no, I actually want a real BSD-ish style license. It's actually a same license. I'm pretty sure it's OSI certified. Someone can probably correct me if I'm wrong. But it's actually a really standard BSD-flavored license. The only problem they've got is they can't accept external patches, because every time they think about that, their intellectual property people have to lie down and wait for it to pass. You know, brown paper bag. It does work on mono. It does suck a bit on mono. They clearly ran PyStone, which is an old drystone integer benchmark, on mono, because it runs PyStone like a demon. Unfortunately, PyStone only really tests integer arithmetic, which is not exactly the world's most representative sample. I've pointed them at PyBench, which is a much more representative sample of things. Currently, there's things they've got there, I think, to do with exception handling, where they're 2,000% slower than CPython. The IronPython actually drives a lot of mono development, because a new version of IronPython will come out and it stops working on mono, so they'll have to go and implement the bits they've missed. So this is really cool. And they're also doing a lot of performance work, because they really want IronPython on mono to be a really nice platform. There's also Jython. Again, doesn't have the interpreter lock. It's running on the JVM. Jython development has stalled a bit, unfortunately. Most of the people have moved on to other bigger and better things. There's PyPy. This is a research project that hurts my brain. It's a self-hosting Python interpreter. The EU gave them a whole wadge of cash to make it work. They're targeting LLVM primarily, but a bunch of other things. I think it has a JavaScript output backend for God knows what reason. They've now got it self-hosting, and the nice thing is that LLVM produces absolute speed freak code, like just nutso code. You know, in many cases, it's way, way faster than GCC-generated code. So there's a great deal of hope there that PyPy will actually end up doing a whole bunch of really interesting, cool things, and will also have a proper Python compiler that compiles to native code. That would be rocket. It's a seriously gnarly, gnarly kind of cool thing. And I've talked faster, but I'm getting to the close of the end here, so that makes Donna happy. She said, can you please talk fast? So 3.0 is our one chance. We're not going to do this again to you, promise, really. There is no intention of ever doing this again. We're pretty confident we've got most of the real stupidities out of the language now. Guido doesn't like that word. He calls them regrets. It's lovely, but they're stupid. Another bit of video.
3 shall be the number thou shalt count. And the number of the counting shall be 3.
As I say, it's 4 our one chance.
Shall thou not count?
Shut up. We're not going to do a 4.0. It's just, it's been so much work to get 3.0 out the door, and it's not even close. We've only had the second alpha now. And of course,
5 is right up.
I should say, though, 2.x, it's not going away anytime soon. Remember I said before, 18 months between releases. At the best intentions in the world, 2.6 and 3.0 will be out later this year, towards the second half of this year. You know, let's say Q4 or Q5. So we're talking about then 18 months more before 2.7. So you're talking, that takes us up to what? End of 2010? You know, the year we make contact, or is that the other one? We've already made contact, apparently. 2010 is the one with Helen Mirren, right? Yeah. For some reason, that sticks in my brain. Sorry, I'm a boy. 3.0 is, however, the future. We're going to try to make that future as least painful as possible. That's not even English. I'm obviously needing water. It's a two-snake future. Thanks, Nigel, for spotting that last night. This cool picture. Cool thing in the museum. Sorry about the camera. The goal overall is, though, to have less of Elwood and more of what I like to call Happy Puppy. Go back.
Monty Python was flying circus.
I had to attribute the various flicker photos. I thought the slide was annoying. What happened to the credits? we'll go to questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Anthony? Can you come on down the front, please?
As you pointed out, we all know about the long time frames for some other languages doing their re-implementations. Can you give us an idea of the time frame that's been involved with 3.0? Not coming up, but
so far. It's been a dream sort of future, one day we'll fix all this stuff. When Guido was hired by a company, they gave him 50% of his time to work on Python. He saved up a bunch of that and then got enough, a big chunk of it. It really kicked into sort of gear about a year or so ago. It's been the last year, it's been under really heavy development. You've seen there's Alpha 1, Alpha 2. It's even so, even without a massive rewrite to the language and with Guido working 50% of his time on it paid, it's still going to be a couple of years worth of work. There was about a year leading up to Alpha 1. The goal was the 3.0 final will be about a year after Alpha 1. I'm not so confident of that, but, you know, we'll just blank that bit out of the recording. I really do think it'll be early next year before it's out. I think there's just so much work to bed it down. So it's been, you know, a couple of years, which, again, that's without a rewrite.
What's the support roadmap for 2?
So I started, when I became release manager, started doing regular 6-monthly, plus or minus a month or two, maintenance releases. So there's now, we keep maintenance releases of the current version while we're developing the new the next version. So at the moment, 2.5.2 is about to come out. Martin von Lewis is actually taking over doing the release management for that one because I've totally failed to get it together. Moving city and moving jobs and everything else has just meant my time has been nightmarish. So we'll be having a 2.5.2, there'll be at least a 2.5.3. Again, 2.6, there'll be a 2.6.1, a 2.6.2. Once we go to 2.7, assuming, as I suspect, that'll be the last major release in the 2.x series, because by that time it'll be, we're talking about, you know, 2010 or so, people have actually started to move over. We'll keep maintaining it as long as there is interest and need. Does that make sense?
You know, with 3, so there's the projects like Swig that we're using, but we've also got proprietary products that use Python for modelling and whatnot. What sort of things should I be making sure our vendor is paying attention to in terms of...
Okay, there is actually a PEP off the top of my head. I can't give it to you. It's one of the 3000 series, I think, or 3100 series. PEPs are the Python Enhancement Protocols. They're like little Python RFCs. Here's what we're going to change. People can discuss the implementation. There is a PEP which actually talks about the C code changes. I didn't actually touch on that in the talk, my bad. But there are actually going to be a bunch of changes to the C code that they'll need to change. So all the extension modules will need a rewrite to work with Python 3. I think you'll find most of the big ones, sort of your numeric, your Python imaging library and the lot, will actually switch over at the same time. We've moved most of the Python core built-ins over and it wasn't hugely painful. There's a PEP document. There's a PEP. I wish I could look at the number right now. Maybe somebody's got internet can actually look it up for me. But there is one that actually talks about the changes that I'll need to make.
You spoke about Python being great for teaching and learning, given that we've got a completely new Python in the wings. Is it appropriate for people who don't have a legacy to start using 3?
Not yet. Maybe about after 3.0 has been out 6 months, just because I'm sure 3.1 will be a lot sooner than the 18 months, just because I think there'll be things we'll discover that are oops kind of issues that need a major release to fix. So one of the things that Python does with the maintenance releases is they're completely backwards compatible, obviously unless you're depending on some really evil broken bug, but we don't break things between maintenance releases, which is the third number releases, so 2.5.1, 3.0.1. That'll be just bug fixes. So if we have to change things to fix them, we'll have to do that in 3.1.
Because I'm thinking of, you know, Python programmers, the next gen.
Yeah. Well, the University of Melbourne is actually switching to a Python-based curriculum for their undergrads, which is rocking, because most universities used to be the case where they taught whatever the lecturer's pet language was that he'd implemented. Sorry if any of you are out there, but that's a really dumb idea. And teaching C++ to first years is child abuse.
I think it's great that you guys are worrying about keeping the language nice and simple and clean, and actually working to reduce like the complexity in it. I was wondering if you had any comments about another widely deployed scripting language in browsers that seems to be going the other way around and adding lots of, some of them from Python, so a whole bunch of new features into their next version.
You'd be referring to JavaScript, of course. Look, I'm not in, not in the habit of making public pronouncements about other languages. Okay, I lie. in this case, I won't pay them out too much because the stuff they're adding is much better. I mean, as I said, they've been looting Python. We've looted, you know, our generators came from Icon, list comprehensions came from Haskell. I think it was either Haskell or ML, blank for a moment. Every language steals from every other language. They may as well steal from the best. Are there any others?
No more questions?
We can get on to the prizes giving out that Donna wants to do.
Great.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Anthony. Couple of months ago, actually, how many people here went to OSDC a couple of months ago up in Brisbane? Yeah, there were a few. Cool. At OSDC, my friend Flame came up with a really cool game that we can play with an audience like this. It's kind of complicated, though. So what we're going to do is do a quick run-through for the first one and see how we go, see if you can all follow it. So this is how it works. This is a brand new 1RU server case with a power supply, never used. Who wants it? Down the front here? Okay, it's yours. Can we follow that? Because what Flame noticed is that geeks tend to accumulate toys that they can't throw out because they're kind of cool, but they're not actually using. So let's redistribute it. Rack mount, it's a 10-base T hub, 24 port. Who wants it? Yep, this gentleman down here. Yep, down here. Now, these ones are slightly more unusual. This is an LCD module with a serial interface, 2-line, 20 character, and there are 3 of them. Yep. Got those. And I can assure you, they do actually have excellent support in the Linux, because I was the driver maintainer for a couple of years. That's why I have so many. Firewire case with a Firewire card, but no cable. Can you pass that back, please? And finally, for that retro computing experience, a V90 modem. We thought it would be a really good tradition to start to, if you've got any hardware lying around at these sorts of events, it'd be really cool to bring it in. What's that? You've got some more swag to give away.
The world is dumb.
Dumb. So what do we have here? Whoa, we have 6 modems. Thanks, Scott. Are they 36K modems? And what's this? Telephone headset? Okay, let's go with the modems first. Who wants modems? Okay, you can distribute those. Okay, we have a Krone punch-down block, some cable for termination. Yes, down here. And a telephone headset, or at least that's what I'm told it is, but it's just a box. Yes, the person down here in the Grant. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Anthony. Everybody, join me in thanking Anthony for his fantastic keynote speech. So the code for all of us is open, and we share and we borrow and we build upon it. LCA has been running for, you know, quite some time now. OSDC is a younger conference, but we've already started to fifth, thanks, Scott. So we've started to borrow from OSDC. You've seen some of the, let's, you know, make this a swap meet kind of thing. This afternoon we'll have the OSDC does lightning talks, kind of cool sort of thing. So please do take a note of OSDC, the Open Source Developers Conference. It's really different to LCA, but we've got so much overlap and so much in common that we're kind of like, I don't know, are we like sisters or brothers or something? I don't know. But yeah, OSDC is really cool. Call for papers, 28th of April. Those dates, 3rd to the 5th of December, are very probably. It is really being announced now, and venue is still to be determined. But it will be in Sydney, so that's a start. Yeah. And now we come to the part of...
If people want to get involved from Sydney, Evan Laybourne's the guy to get in touch with. He's easy enough to find. Just ping him an email, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to have helpers.
And I believe osdc.com.au is the place to go, down the bottom. Excellent, all good. Okay. Prizes. What is my random algorithm today? Would all the pregnant women in the room please stand up? You know what's really odd about that, Kel? You're actually on my random list. But you're a long way down. So there better be a lot of people here who didn't come with hangovers or something. Okay, but the first one that I would really like to do is, Anthony, grab that big one. Yeah, the big one. Scott Johnston, are you here? Please come up here. Scott Johnston, this is not random. He was the person who registered and paid first. Hewlett, HP have given us a bunch of equipment to help with the conference and a couple of laptops. One of the laptops we've used religiously, organising team has used religiously in the lead up to the conference, and one is as a prize. Thank you, Scott, because when you registered, I went, woohoo! Okay, next. Oh, this bit's fun. Dave Hunter, are you here? Come on down. Dave, you get one of these Nokia internet tablets. Would the chaps from Nokia please stand up? Apparently these guys smuggled these in for us. They're not sponsors. They were bribes. Because they wanted tickets. And I am bribable. Keep that in mind. Next on the list, Graham Charles, come on down. Graham Charles, are you at the Copeland going, suck, damn it. Suffer. Michael Cohen, come on down. Nice. This one, as yesterday, courtesy of our friends at HP again, an iPack, not currently running Linux, but it can make it do so. And finally, no, leave the big one because that's for eye sharpener. Who knows about eye sharpener? Hands up. For those of you who don't know about eye sharpener, we came up with this kind of plan. When we had pencils for our swag bags, there was this big discussion about they're blunt. We'll have to sharpen them all. And we went, I'm not doing that. But how do we have lots of sharpeners as a conference? Well, buy heaps. That's boring. I know, someone said. I think it might have been Peter Leverdink, the Dutch. Blame the Dutch again. Let's have sharpener, hot or not. So he spent 4 hours when I'm sure he should have been doing something else, writing up a Web 2.0 social networking site for sharpeners. And sort of started to spread the word. So basically, you take a picture of a sharpener, you upload it, and then people vote on it. And you get to vote on all the others. And, you know, there were some fairly obvious sharpeners that went up at first. And then there were some knives, and one of the scoring things is not a sharpener. Whilst you can sharpen a pencil with a knife, it was not in the spirit of the thing. And then we started to get the novelty sharpeners coming up. And then someone went, I'm going to build a steam-powered sharpener. Rob, are you here or are you running around like a headless chook being the great volunteer you are? I think this is steam sharpener 3.6. Yeah, it's been... Anyway, I've seen it in action. It is hilarious. It will probably be iller. It will be probably around an open day. I imagine there will be a demo this afternoon because to win, you actually have to sharpen a pencil. So some of the other entries just, you know, disqualify themselves because they can't. But yeah, I think there was a problem with, you know, too much speed or not enough, or it was getting too technical for me. Anyway, so one of the prizes here is for that, but we will do that this afternoon at closing ceremonies. Oh, the prize is an E-PC. But we have one more Nokia internet tablet to give away. And the next name on my list is Nigel Tao. Oh, what is your name? It's this guy's name, though.
Hello. I have a Nokia N800 for sale. If you want to see me afterwards, that would be great.
The next person on the list. Sorry, Kel, still a long way down. If anyone sells an oil PC, I will seek you out and kill you. Trust me. Mark, there's lots of Marks in the room, isn't there? Mark Ellum. Are you going to sell it? Congratulations. Thank you very much. Okay, and last of all...
What the hell's this?
Okay, what the hell is this? With the speakers who are here and not hungover, celebrating the fact that they've finished or not here, writing their talks, those of you who are here, please come up to the front because we will unveil someone, namely... Oh, Penny... made us a quilt of our logo. And we would like, we would like to have the speakers sign the panels, the neutral panels, please, so that we can add this to the prize draw this afternoon at our closing ceremony. We do, there are pens. which segues to the raffle. We're not doing an auction this year. We do have a raffle. And Rusty has come up with this, you know, formula for the optimum number of tickets. I might make Rusty explain.
So who knows about the big Colonel poster, the 40-foot long, 2622? Those of you who've got commits in and haven't signed it yet, go up and sign your name next to your patch. It's up in Copeland, along the back wall. We're raffling that and some other stuff that wasn't bolted down off at the end. So you can buy raffle tickets for $2 approximately at the Rego desk. And we will keep selling them. You can buy them tomorrow, but the draw's tonight. So, oh, and the money is going to
the Little Penguin Foundation,
which does
looks after little penguins. It does research into them anyway, which may not be looking after them. I don't know.
Okay. Is there anything else?
Oh, and we're also going to be selling T-shirts, remaining T-shirts from now on. So if you really love our fashion sense this year at LPA, you can grab yourself another T-shirt at registration desk. They have a little booklet thing that they're doing receipts, and they're $25 each. And we don't want to store them, so please, please buy them. Otherwise, I've got a wardrobe for the next, you know, couple of months. And for those of you who bump into speakers who were not here this morning, we will put this in the speaker's lounge today so that other people can come up and sign it. It's looking so cool. And let me just check my list. I'm sure there was something else I was meant to do today. So did I talk about the AGM? Yeah. Did I talk about important motions? Open day? Where's that? Here? Who's coming? Absolutely everyone who hasn't got an excuse. Excellent. Gaming MediConf wants people. I did that. Speaker signing the quilt. Yes. Did I talk about the Google party tonight? Yes. No, I didn't. Okay, where is it? It is in North Court. Does that mean absolutely nothing to everyone? Excellent. North Court is actually... I'm completely disowned. Is it that way? It's either that way or that way. It's just next to this building and has a big sail over it. The one that goes... Ooh. Down. Anyway, he did a really good thing. Anyway, there's a sail over it. That's where the Google party will be tonight. There was discussion about it being on the South Lawn. We scrapped that because at some point in the past 30 days, the long-term forecast suggested it would rain tonight. But I don't trust long-term forecasts in relation to Melbourne. Does anybody? So, party tonight, yeah. And that's from 7. You don't have to go far, and it's casual. There will be a barbecue. There will be yummy things for vegetarians and vegans. And there will be beer. There will be wine. There will be champagne. There will be soft drinks. It will be lovely. I think that's it. What's the time? I have something for the pregnant lady. See me later, Cal. Babe. She's a babe. Colonel Hacker. Kelly Yo. Awesome. That's it, really. Have a great day. One more thing. Thank you. Oh, no, thank yous. I'll do them in Savo. Lightning Talks back here. I don't know what time. Second last session of the day. Last session is conference closed. Have a great day.
Why? Oh, God. Ask Alice for a sec.